Your daily dose of sports and fun. This is the Morning Drive Podcast from Double T 97.3, presented by Cantex Roofing and Construction.
I'm Mike Hebert, owner of Cantex Roofing and Construction. Every day is game day, and we'll get it right when it comes to your roofing, construction, windows, and mirrors. Call Cantex Roofing and Construction today. Together, we are one serving you.
Good to have you with us today with Jamie Linton, Jeff McGuire. I'm Chuck Hines. Yates Flooring Center chat line is open. Go to the Double T 97.3 mobile app for that, or the Visual Edge IT hotline. It's open too at 806-771-0973. Jamie, I saw this story about the Dallas Cowboys this morning. Involves Dalton Schultz, and you know how much I liked him back in the day. As a Cowboy, and I was disappointed when he left the Cowboys and went to the Houston Texans. But I mean, they were able to fill in at the tight end position. But the thing that caught my eye about this article that's in Sports Illustrated about him is he described the Cowboys facility as a zoo. he said it was the culture. At the Star was a distraction. And he said basically he was really surprised at kind of how things went with the Texans compared to how things were with the Cowboys. And, you know, I guess the thing that kind of stood out to me is, like he said there's like two-way mirrors when they're working out, so that people on tours can see the players working out. They can't see them. He goes, but like people are tapping on the window trying to get your attention. He goes, and we can't see them. And it just kind of went on and on and on about the difference. I guess we shouldn't be surprised by that. But he said there's literally people going on tours while you're lifting in the weight room, and you've got like a one-way mirror for people to look like at. It's literally like a zoo, dude. There's people tapping on the glass trying to get your attention. You're doing power cleans or whatnot. It's just, it's different. He said, that's the brand they've built. That's what Jerry Jones likes. That's the way they run things. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, you don't realize how many eyeballs and how much they can maybe distract from stuff just in a locker room, being in a facility, until you go somewhere else. And you're like, holy blank, there's none of that. Because he described Houston as a very well-run organization, which is kind of surprising when you think about, it's not exactly gone swimmingly with the Texans, although here lately it seems like they've gotten things on target, right?
Yeah, he's only been there for that one regime, so he can't really speak to what the Texans were in the past. He can just speak to what he saw in the year that he played with them.
Yeah. He said this place is a well-oiled machine, coaching staff, coaching changes. I can't speak to the previous stuff. He said the strength staff is phenomenal. Training staff is phenomenal. I guess the thing that I just didn't realize that it was – that way that you could go on a tour and see guys lifting. And then I'm sure I could see, you know, some Chuck Hines with his camera around his neck thinking, I can get their attention. Yeah, I can get their attention, you know, and, you know, says this to their lucky lady. I'm like, I'm going to have them turn around so we can get a selfie with them while they're working out.
the insurance commercial comes to mind now with,
Right. No doubt. Yeah. No question. No question. I mean, it's just, I guess I just think about this and go, like, it's just kind of crazy when you think about it. But I guess it is what it is. I guess that's just the Cowboys, and that's the organization. And I don't know. It just seems kind of bizarre. But I guess for him to go to someplace else and kind of have the crust taken out of his eyes and going, oh, maybe this league is somewhat normal. Maybe there is a different way to look at things here as opposed to what we've got going on in Dallas, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't call what's going on in Dallas quite normal.
not by any stretch of the imagination, with all the various lawsuits that Jerry Jones is involved with and unseemly details and things along those lines. So I don't know. Hey, I think it's a great read, and kind of details this in on ESPN about Nick Saban and the events that led to him stepping down as the head football coach at Alabama. And, you know, I think one of the things that really disappointed him more than anything else, according to this article, is what he said about how his players responded after the loss in the semifinal game. And, you know, with regard to their meetings and how much they were going to get paid and how much they were going to play. And he said this, he goes, "I was really disappointed in the way that the players acted after the game. You got to win with class. You got to lose with class. We had opportunities to win the game. We didn't do it. And then showing your blank and being frustrated and throwing helmets and doing stuff, that's not who we are and what we've promoted in our program." And then went on to talk about the meeting. He said he estimates that 70 to 80% of them wanted playing time and NIL assurances. He said, furthering the idea that it was time for him to hang up his whistle. He also cited the constant churn of assistant coaches as a contributing factor. He said, "So I'm saying to myself, maybe this doesn't work anymore, that the goals and aspirations are just different and that it's all about how much money can I make as a player." He goes, "I'm not saying that's bad. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying that's never been what we were about, and it's not why we had success through the years." And so he made the decision after, you know, meeting with his wife and getting away for a few days to retire. And then, and he had given Greg Byrne a heads up the year before, like, "Hey, just so you know, we're going to be evaluating this on a yearly basis." And to the Alabama athletic director's credit, you know, he already had his due diligence done, so that when Saban was ready to go, he already had kind of a couple of guys in mind. And one was the guy that he hired, and the other one was Mike Norvell at Florida State. It kind of sounds like Mike Norvell was maybe the first guy offered, or at least taken, had a real opportunity to take it and turned it down. They didn't say that particularly, but just the read of the article kind of gives you that take that maybe Norvell was just as highly thought of as the Washington guy. But that guy, I mean, he woke up on a Wednesday morning ready to go coach his football team and get ready for a new year. And that afternoon, he was already well on his way to being the Alabama football coach. So just goes to show you how quickly things can change in college football, especially in these days.
Yeah, in a hurry. And again, with it, like he was talking about the churn of the assistant coaches. Well, there's lots of changing with head coaches nowadays as well.
Yeah, no doubt. So, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, how it goes. And one of the things that Greg Byrne looked at is he looked at, you know, coaches that left and who they were replaced with. And for the most part, they guys like in Saban's position that had been really, really successful weren't necessarily replaced with guys that had the same level of success. And when he asked Kalen DeBoer what he thought about being the guy to replace the guy as opposed to being the guy that replaced the guy that replaced the guy, he said, I want to be the guy that replaces the guy. I want that challenge. And that's what really gave Greg Byrne the confidence that he was picking the right guy.
Well, he's got one in Alabama for sure.
This is the Morning Drive Podcast from Double T 97.3, presented by Cantex Roofing and Construction.
It is March the 7th here, and here is Jeff McGuire.
1935 is where we will start. Malcolm Campbell sets a world land speed record of 276.71 miles per hour driving his famous Bluebird car. It's the last record he would set at Daytona Beach, Florida. And unfortunately, it was just, you know, 223 miles slower than Chuck's Pinewood Derby car.
That's disappointing.
I thought you were going to tell me it was his last, because the next time he raced, he killed himself.
Well, he did, I think. But no. Again,
he lost to a Pinewood Derby car. That was probably pretty tough for him to take.
I didn't mean in that way. I meant like in a crash.
1955, baseball commissioner Ford Frick says that he favors the legalization of the spitter.
Okay. I wonder why.
Maybe it's just because so many guys were doing it. I'm guessing you would not be in favor of that, Jamie.
No, I would not.
Okay.
1964, the 11th ACC men's basketball tournament took place. Duke beat Wake Forest 80-59. 6 years later, in 1970, NC State beat South Carolina in the ACC men's basketball tournament, 42-39. While that is a low-scoring game, guys, that score took two overtimes to get to.
Yikes.
We were having this discussion yesterday. You know, the shot clock for college basketball wasn't implemented until the 1985-86 season, and that was a 45-second shot clock. So, you know, a lot of people go back to that Georgetown-Villanova game in 85 because that was the first 64-team tournament. The shot clock didn't go into existence in the college basketball until the next year.
Fast forward to 1986. Wayne Gretzky beats his own NHL season record with his 136th assist. 1996, en route to a Southwest Conference tournament title, number 7 Texas Tech goes on a 20-2 run to beat Texas A&M 85-57 for their 19th straight win.
Nice.
Yes, very nice.
And in 2016, a great broadcasting career began because Peyton Manning announced his retirement from the Denver Broncos and the NFL.
You know, I'm surprised he isn't doing games yet. I realize he's got his, you know, Manning adventure kind of thing going with his brother, and they've been really successful at that. But I just kind of surprised
he's been very vocal in that he does not want to do that because he does not want to criticize other players.
Yeah, I get that. I just wonder at some point in time, Jamie, once the guys that he played with are out, maybe he'll have a different feel on that, but maybe not, you know. And I think he's watched as Aikman has done that and maybe drawn some criticism from being critical and just basically doing his job. And I guess maybe he just doesn't want to do that. And I understand that. That's understandable.
I mean, he's doing his version of play-by-play over on the Deuce, yeah. And
it might be better than the actual one.
Yeah.
Happy National Cereal Day, guys.
Cereal of choice, Jeff, is what?
Oh, number one is Frosted Flakes.
Jamie?
Raisin Bran.
If you had to ask me, like, if I'm like every day, like growing up every day, it was Cheerios, just the regular Cheerios. But the occasional treat for me was Captain Crunch, and then Cocoa Puffs. The Cocoa Puffs was really good. I know there have been people that used to eat Cocoa Puffs with chocolate milk. I was not one of those people, though.
Happy birthday to Bryan Cranston, who was in Breaking Bad. He's 68. Jenna Fisher, 50. Lynn Swan, 72. Joe Carter, Touch 'Em All Joe, 64. And Jeff Kent is 56.
Wow.
And
Jeff Kent, 56.
For our history lesson today, the Treaty of Versailles really is one of the most controversial armistice treaties in history. The treaty is so-called the War Guilt Clause, forced Germany and other Central Powers from World War I to take all of the blame. Now, this meant a loss of territories, reduction in military forces, and reparation payments to the Allied powers. Some historians think that the Treaty of Versailles was the worst of, in the words of British economist John Maynard Keynes, one of the worst serious acts of political unwisdom for which our statesmen have ever been responsible. They say it contributed to Germany's economic and political instability that allowed for for the formation of the National Socialist Party, we know them better as the Nazis, just a year later. Well, on this day, in 1936, Nazi leader Adolf Hitler violates the Treaty of Versailles and the Locarno Pact by sending German military forces into the Rhineland, a demilitarized zone along the Rhine River in western Germany. 2 years later, Nazi Germany burst out of its territories, absorbing Austria and portions of Czechoslovakia. And in 1939, Hitler invaded Poland, leading to the outbreak of World War II in Europe.
Yeah,
and that is this day in sports history.
Yeah. This day in sports history, 6:53 this morning here on the Morning Drive. Somebody weighs in, and you can as well, because look, we like the you know, the shallow end of the pool sometimes, you know, occasionally, not every day, but well, let's not lie to ourselves. If you want to hit us up with your cereal of choice, somebody says Lucky Charms, Jamie. Were you ever a Lucky Charms guy?
Absolutely. Big fan.
Magically delicious.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Really good. Big fan. Still like them today.
Bullfighter wants to know. Go ahead.
I'll say this. I love cereal, and I have had cereal for dinner many, many times because I didn't feel like cooking or getting the house warmed up or whatever. And breakfast for dinner is one of the greatest inventions of all time. But cereal for dinner does not count for breakfast for dinner. That's just being lazy. Nothing wrong with being lazy, but that's not breakfast for dinner.
Okay, that's a strange take, but I mean, I guess we should be used to that.
I'm with Jeff on that one. It's not enough. You need some meat and protein.
Bacon, yeah. Waffles, pancakes, yeah. All of these things are acceptable. Cereal, just being lazy.
Yeah. Just being lazy. Bullfighter wants to know, Cocoa Puffs with chocolate milk or the Cocoa Puffs turn into chocolate milk? No, Cocoa Puffs with chocolate milk. Our friend Aaron Dickens, he liked to eat his Cocoa Puffs like that.
The Morning Drive podcast from Double T 97.3 is presented by Cantex Roofing and Construction.
Thank you for being with us with Jamie Linton, Jeff McGuire. I'm Chuck Hines. Yates Flooring Center chat line is open. Go to the Double T 97.3 mobile app for that. The Visual Edge IT hotline open too at 806-771-0973. Jamie, you have a question at 725, but this is off the Yates Flooring Center chat line. Mike's question of the day is, what do you think the win-loss records are for men's and women's basketball at the Big 12 tournament in Kansas City? I'm going to say for the women, I'd take 1-1 right now. I'd take 1-1. And for the men, here's what's in my head, Jamie. I'm going to say 2-1 for the men. That would make you to the championship game, and you would, in my opinion, not win that game.
I'll go 1-1 for the men and 0-1 for the women.
Okay, that's fair. The men's tournament doesn't get started until Tuesday of next week. Texas Tech's first games at this point in time, because it looks like you'll be could be the 4 seed. Okay, you could be the 3 seed. Wouldn't be until a week from today. If they're the 4 seed, they would play at 11:30. If they're the 3 seed, they play at 8:30. And then the winners would play in the semifinals on Friday, a week from tomorrow, at 6 and 8:30. And the Big 12 championship game is at 5 p.m. on Saturday, a week from Saturday. So I like that. I like the fact that it's kind of done before Selection Sunday. There have been many times where, you know, that last game there is you're kind of waiting on your edge there and going, okay, if this team wins, that kind of makes Selection Sunday somewhat exciting. Like, okay, well, we got to wait on this game to get finished so we can kind of pencil in the bracket here and put it in here and kind of look at this. But I think it's probably good for the teams in the Big 12 to be done by Saturday the 16th. So that way, get an extra day underneath them.
Has the Big 12 ever played on Sunday, on Selection Sunday? They have?
It may have been a long time ago. I may be wrong on that.
I feel like it was just a couple of years ago that they did, that the championship game was on Sunday.
Yeah.
Like at 11 o'clock tip.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Right.
I don't like I feel like all the games need to be done by the time Selection Sunday starts, or maybe even like an hour before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it feels like that all needs to be done. So, yeah, I prefer the Big 12 finishing up on Saturday. I prefer them all finishing up on Saturday.
Yeah, but I mean, Sunday's a big day. I mean, because, you know, you got a lot of eyeballs that are, you know, available that they got nothing else to do. I mean, they're like, what am I going to do? Spend time with my family? What am I going to do? Get out and take a walk? What am I going to do? Exercise? What am I going to do? Drive around, just take a Sunday drive? No, I want to.
Well, you just painted such a great picture of college basketball fans.
Tell me, our sports fans, tell me I'm wrong.
You're wrong.
I'm wrong, Jeff.
You're
tell
wrong.
Tell me I'm wrong.
You're wrong.
Because you could also go to church Sunday morning. Yeah. You could go to lunch with your family after church. You could go to the dog park. You could go play tennis. You could go for a ride on a motorcycle. You could go for a drive through the country. There's a million things that you could do while you're waiting for Selection Sunday to happen, which it's better than Bowl Selection Sunday. I will say March Madness Selection Sunday exponentially better than Bowl Selection Sunday.
Yes, yes.
Because that is, hey, let's talk about four teams and two games for 2.5 hours. And oh, by the way, here's everybody else. They'll actually look at all four quadrants of the bracket. I will give Selection Sunday for basketball that.
Mm-hmm. I am sitting on the edge of my seat on Sunday, man, from about 11 on, you know. I hope I'm still here, man. That'd be kind of a, well, let's be honest, it'd be a shock. But I mean, I'd love to still be here, still playing, still hooping it up, man. Going, hey, we're getting ready for Selection Sunday. We're getting ready for a basketball game, all that kind of stuff. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. All right. So that's Jeff. What did you say on Mike's question of the day? Did you give an answer yet?
I'm with Jamie, where I think the men go 1-1, and I think the women go 0-1.
Okay. All right. Now we have this Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Since it's a cereal of the day, if you want to weigh in your favorite cereal, you can go to the Double T97.3 mobile app. Yep. Presented by Happy State Bank, and weigh in on the 8th Flooring Center chat line. Were you ever a Quisp or Quake fan? Quisp or Quake?
Quake was a pretty good first-person shooter on the PC for a while. I played more Quake 2 than Quake 1, if that's what you're talking about.
No, I'm talking about the cereal, Quisp or Quake.
Do not recall it, so I don't think I was.
That's my childhood more so. The Captain Crunch... The only thing about the Captain Crunch is you couldn't necessarily eat it every day because it tore up the roof of your mouth. But I love me some Captain Crunch, man. That'd be awesome right now.
Captain Crunch is definitely in the rotation in the McGuire household. definitely in the rotation. The only cereal that I won't get anymore, and that I got burned out on it growing up, and I'm not even sure it's still around. But it was Sugar Bear cereal.
I remember that. Yeah.
My mom got it into her head that it was my favorite cereal. And that was the only cereal she bought for 2.5 years. And finally, we were at the grocery store. I happened to go with her that time. And she grabbed the box of cereal. I said, Mom, any cereal on the shelf but that one. You want to get regular Corn Flakes or, Cheerios or just Wheat Bran. I'm in. I'm done with this one. And she's like, I thought you liked this one. Mom, I just been eating because it's been the cereal in the house.
Okay. Let's see this. Chuck, we're boycotting Kellogg's. Pick a different cereal. All right. I don't really know why. We get this. Sugar Pops are tops. That from Syntex Hank. Somebody brings up Raisin Bran, Jamie, like you.
That's good. I'm a fan.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody says this Selection Sunday used to be an evening show. Championship games used to be around noon on Sunday for the Southwest Conference and Big Ten, I believe. Not sure if that was still on Sunday when it became the Big 12. Okay. Cocoa Pebbles and the milk after. It's like eat the Cocoa Pebbles dry and then have the milk after.
No. You drank the milk out of the bowl afterwards.
Oh, okay, yeah, Chuck, yeah.
That's not that difficult, man.
Well, you know, sometimes I make it more complicated than it is, Jamie. I mean,
I think most cereal, the leftover milk is pretty good afterwards. I mean, if you like the flavor of the cereal, then you're going to enjoy what's left of the milk afterwards.
Yeah.
Because it's going to have a little bit of that flavor to it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think you're... I think you're exactly right. Okay. Any idea why anybody's boycotting Kellogg's? Is there some kind of political thing that I'm not aware of? And if there is, I mean, I'm sorry. I hope you get over it. 7:23 this morning here on the Morning Drive. Take your thoughts, comments, Yates Flooring Center chat line. Jamie, as you start getting ready for Texas, and we'll get into more of that here, maybe this morning and then tomorrow, obviously. What concerns you the most about the Longhorn baseball team as they get ready for to come to Lubbock and face Texas Tech Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Well, I think they're a much better team than their record shows. I mean, you look at their losses just like you look at the Red Raider losses, and they're a good baseball team. So any thought that this is a series where the Red Raiders are the way better team because Texas has come in losing four straight, I think is a bit of a joke. I think this is a toss-up series. I think Texas has a really good pitching staff. And I think they'll really challenge this really good offense for the Red Raiders. So, I mean, that's the thing that jumps out to me right off the bat.
All right, 7:24 and some change here this morning. Jamie's question of the day is next on Lubbock Sports Station, Double T 97.3.
Your daily dose of sports and fun. This is the Morning Drive Podcast from Double T 97.3, presented by Cantex Roofing and Construction. Time now for Jamie's question of the day on Lubbock Sports Station, Double T 97.3.
All right, gentlemen, I feel contractually obligated to do this since this weekend is the last time the Red Raider baseball team and the Longhorn baseball team will meet as we expect as Big 12 full foes in the regular season. We you know they could play in the Big 12 tournament or the NCAA postseason this year as well, but just for Big 12 play regular season, I think if I asked you your favorite moments against the Longhorns in Tech sports history, I think when it comes to football, we would say the Crabtree catch. We would, for basketball, I think most of us would probably say Keenan Evans step back.
That's very high on the list. Very high on the list, yeah.
Okay, and so I think there's some good moments or weekends or whatever on the baseball diamond as well. So I'm going to ask you today, what is your favorite memory of the Texas Tech, Texas baseball series?
I know.
I think for me.
Go ahead.
I was going to say Kurt Wilson.
You need to finish.
The walk off for him, the home run.
The home run. Okay.
Okay. And the Haxton call, Kurt Wilson, you whatever he says,
magical son of a gun, I think.
Magical son of a gun, yeah. I thought that was great. That's what sticks out to me.
I know it was a loss, and that's the part that kind of taints it. But the stealing home with two outs in the bottom of the ninth when you're down by one. I want to say that was what? 17, 18, something?
No, 14.
That was 14? And it just the stones to do that in that type of game that you absolutely were trying to win. That's not an easy thing to do to steal home. And you don't normally try to do it in the bottom of the ninth when you're down by one with a runner on third. Like, I mean, obviously it wouldn't be stealing home from second, but it's... You try to hit that guy in, and everything about Tadlock the entire time he's been here is we're going to hit the ball out of the ballpark and handle it that way. It was so unlike him and just such a switch for that moment. I know it wasn't a loss. You ended up losing that one in extra innings, but that just jumps out to me as we're here to try to win this right now, and no matter what you are thinking. I'd also say hitting the first batter a few years ago when you were in Austin was kind of fun too, but that's a different story for a different day.
I will say this about both of your answers, which I think are good ones. I feel like Kurt Wilson's steal of home to win in walk-off fashion on Friday night before the Grand Slam, if I'm comparing it to Chuck's, the steal of home is to win a game in walk-off fashion is way more rare than the Grand Slam to win a game in walk-off fashion. And to compare to yours, Jeff, this won the game. It was over. Yours tied it. I feel like Kurt Wilson's steal of home to win a game against the Longhorns is completely disrespected. I feel like that highlight should be way more respected than the two that you guys just talked about. But people talk about those two more than the one that actually won a game and is extremely rare. How many times in your life have you seen a steal of home to win a game?
Probably that would be it.
That's it for me. That's it for me. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that would be my number one answer, just because of the rare nature of it. And again, it's against one of your rivals. Now, if you really wanted to get to it, you would say the series for Kurt Wilson against Texas, you know, that year, 2 years ago, where he walks him off with a steal of home one night and he walks him off with a grand slam the next night. You know, you couple those together and you say that's the greatest memories. I could totally buy into that. For me, I mean, I go back to two other times. In 2013, you know, you weren't a great baseball team at all, and you went to Austin and you won a series for the first time since 2001. Jared Poteet, there's a name from the past, hit a solo home run in like the seventh or eighth to win Friday night's game 2-1, and then he had a seventh inning or eighth inning hit to drive in the go-ahead run, and you won by one on Sunday. And just the I don't know, the pure shock of the Longhorn fans and that crowd that little Texas Tech had just come here and won a series. And then the success that you've had there in other years, you swept them at one point in Austin in 17, and then go back just a few seasons ago. I don't know if you guys remember the series where Ryan Sublette comes on in the ninth, or not in the ninth, comes in late on Friday and pitches more than two innings. So he must have come in sometime in the, I don't know, I guess in the seventh, because he pitches the eighth, the ninth, and I think gets outs in the seventh too. And then the next day, remember, you're up by maybe 5-3, something like that, and the rains come with the bases loaded and two outs for the Longhorns, and so you get the second out, and they delay the game to the next day, and because of that, Ryan Sublette has enough rest to come back out and pitch again, and the first batter he faces, he throws three straight strikes by him, and you had to sit on the threat of the Longhorns are about to take the lead. They've got the bases loaded, right? And Sublette just comes in and mows him down with three straight strikes, ends the threat. You win the game by a run or two, whatever it was. And it was just like, oh my gosh, Ryan Sublette is like the calmest, coolest. I mean, he just hit legendary status for the Red Raiders just on that weekend. That was really cool as well.
Was it the Texas or TCU series that it was Gingrey on the mound, and it was like the seventh or eighth? It was seventh or eighth, maybe. Right before the eighth, and the rain came, and he was just mowing everybody down, but it was like 1-0 at that point. So they delayed the game to Sunday. No, it was the third inning. But Gingrey got burned on Saturday. So then we did a doubleheader on Sunday and then ended up sweeping both of those two games.
That was a TCU home series. Yeah.
I couldn't remember if that was Texas or TCU.
TCU home series, yep. Brian Klein, the winning 3-run homer in that game.
Couple things here. Jay Ellis correct. Stealing home to win the game is way better than tying and eventually losing. Here's the exact one is Kurt Wilson, you beautiful son of a gun, you. So there you go. The home steal is number one, is my number one, no doubt.
This is the Morning Drive Podcast from Double T 97.3, presented by Cantex Roofing and Construction.
Be soon on our airwaves with Texas Ranger Baseball, and look forward to that in my backyard and just enjoying a little Ranger Baseball for the defending world champions. Hey, good morning with Jamie Lent and Jeff McGuire. I'm Chuck Hines. Come to you this morning from the First United Bank studio and look forward to hearing from you in the Yates Flooring Center chat line, Visual Edge IT hotline 2 at 806-771-0973. We get this, so little man helping man or man helping woman. University in the South Loop is a cluster. All right, oh, no. So you know, keep that in mind as you're out.
Hope everybody's
getting ready
okay.
to go. Yeah, right. Absolutely. Hope everybody's okay. It's like when the helicopters go over my house, Jamie, and you know. Sometimes you hear them going real fast, and sometimes you hear them going low, and you go, oh, man, I hope who's ever in there is okay. And because, you know, it's not good news generally. But the good news is they can get them to, you know, Covenant or UMC quickly and take care of them. So But yeah, that's always a thought that I have when those things go over my head. It's like, oh, man, I feel for the people in there. Just hope that they get to where they need to be and get taken care of. Let's see here. When you add in the go-ahead home run against Oklahoma State in the Supers, Kurt Wilson has three of the top 10, 20 plays in Tech baseball history. Okay.
Okay. I'm going to get in the argument for me. No. Is during the Tim Tadlock era, it's probably three of the, you'd probably close that down to three of the top 10.
Yeah. Let's see. We get this. Good luck, Lady Raiders. Okay. Yeah, they could use some. I mean, whatever. I mean, they've kind of changed up the mojo, some things, you know, just trying to do things different, just kind of whatever was up is down, whatever's down is up. So, I mean, that just anything you can do to kind of change your, there's some things that, you know, routine stays, and then there's some things just like, oh, let's change it up a little bit here and see if we can create a little magic. Bullfighter says best call ever, Jamie. So that's good. Oh, right. Bullfighter. He's a fan. All right. So I saw this, you know, we talked about the Dalton Schultz comment about the Cowboys place being kind of a zoo. And now I'm reading about, you know, Micah Parsons says there's a problem with the culture, and basically Dak Prescott says, you know, he takes that when you talk about the culture, he takes that as an attack. That is not good, Jamie. When you got one guy saying one thing and another guy saying another thing, and they're your two leading players on the team, like your leader on offense and your leader on defense. And man, and then you got a guy like, you know, Dalton Schultz, who's saying, hey man, this place is a zoo. You got people on tours and tapping on one-way mirrors while you're working out and trying to get you to look at them so they can, you know, wave to you or whatever. And man, that seems like a bit of a problem.
Yeah, clearly. I mean, I really take less into the whole Dalton Schultz thing. I mean, the tapping on the mirror thing, probably sure, distracting, annoying to him once. Mm-hmm. But I think the fact that your two leaders, or one, just go to the fact that one of your leaders, one of your best players, is saying they have a culture problem. Okay, yeah. That seems to me like there's a problem.
Okay. Dak said this. He said, the culture is high from my standpoint. I say that in the sense that I don't know all of the talk that's been said, so I don't want to go into good/bad behavior or whatever. If you all know of anybody, I'm not the one listening, and I try not to.
Yeah, I don't love, to be honest, that Micah Parsons says that out loud to the public, to the media, whatever. What are you trying to say? And also, remember, you're one of the leaders of the team. Okay, you factor into that culture. So in certain ways, that's kind of, I'm not saying that he can control everything, but that's on the leaders of the team. You can see where Dak Prescott would be offended by that, right? He's the quarterback, which automatically makes him the leader of that team. So Dak's going to take offense to that. I get it. But I also think, I don't know, maybe Micah Parsons is taking responsibility by saying, hey, we have to change it. It's on us. I don't know. I didn't hear the entire quote. But you can't just, hey, we have a culture problem, and then, but that has nothing to do with me, when you're one of the leaders of the team.
Yeah, and what one of the things that Micah Parsons says is that we need to have a way more accountability. I just think we let things slide too often because we know we're good. That's all about me. I want to change the culture. So it just seems like, I don't know, it just seems like both those comments are things that should be aired, not in the public, but like in the locker room. Like, hey guys, you know, on one end, Dak can't necessarily criticize the culture because then he looks like he's throwing teammates under the bus. And Micah Parsons, because he's a defensive guy, he can maybe throw that around a little bit more, and the defense is all going to rally around him, whereas Dak needs the whole team to rally around him. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess to a certain degree. I think it's easier for a defensive player. I just think you're going to always look to the quarterback for the guy that really defines culture.
Yeah, it's easy for the defensive guy to kind of throw the darts, whereas the quarterback has to be kind of more all-inclusive, so to speak, right?
Yeah, so who is he referring to when he's saying guy's not taking responsibility or we let things slide because we know we're good? You know, who is he referring to? And has he tried to change the culture, but nothing has been done? And so now this is like a last resort thing, okay? So we've talked about this internally. Nothing's changed. Okay, well, I'm going to make my point to the media now. See if that affects change or brings about change.
Yeah. I don't know. It sounds like something they got to get cleared up so they can all be on the same page. Okay, this from the 8th Sporting Center chat line. The traffic lights are out at University in the South Loop. Police are directing traffic and the power company is there. Okay, good. Great. So they're getting it fixed. And the police are out there helping people out. Just so have a little patience this morning. That's, you know, that's like me.
Patience on the road
patience.
Going into work? No
I
way.
I know. 8:09 and some change here this morning on the Morning Drive. Thoughts, comments, Yates Flooring Center chat line.
This has been the Morning Drive podcast, presented by Cantex Roofing and Construction. Check out our library of Double T 97.3 podcasts at Double T 97.3.com.